Kerry Louise, Clayton Fletcher, and Sean Eli, welcome to Coffee in the Clouds. How are you?
We're great. Yeah, right.
I'm almost as good as Kerry.
Kerry, what's with the hat?
I'm happy I took a shower. You know, this was my, and I haven't taken a shower in so long that I forget how long it takes me to get ready. So I wasn't ready in time. So I'm going to have to, like, kind of fix myself as we go along, and I'll just, like, look at myself if you don't mind.
Maybe
I'm
we'll
almost done. I'm almost done. I just got to take these out, and I'll be, look at this. Voila. Wait a minute, a little brushing. How do I look?
Do my hair next.
Who are you, and what have you done with Kerry?
See, that's how you get the puff right there. You get the little curlers, and there. God, it took me... Thank you for letting me take a shower. Look at this. I haven't looked like this in a long time.
You look fabulous.
So guys, this is our inaugural Coffee in the Clouds with comedians. And, you know, we've been talking about doing this for a while, and there's a lot of crossover in the business world and entertainment and da-da-da-da. So we're going to go round robin and, you know, ladies first, you know, Kerry, who are you and what do you do?
Well, I'm a stand-up comic, mother of three, and an author.
Wow. Okay.
And I'm undoing my, I forgot to undo my my mail. You heard a ding. So I'm very busy. What keeps me busy the most is my three brats. I love them, but they keep me very busy. I wrote a book about them. It's called Mean Mommy. It's all about mothers who bring it back to the basic. You know, I'm just going to cook you one dinner and you're going to eat it and that's it.
So Clayton.
For the three of them?
I say that again?
One dinner for the three of them? They have to fight over it?
Yeah, well, one meal. I'm not going to make like mac and cheese for one. Steak for the other, you know, they all have three different taste buds and it's been a challenge, but I'm just getting, if you don't eat it, you don't eat it. Getting back to the basics. Not everyone's going to get a trophy in my world here. I don't have time for that. I got to get on stage.
Clayton, we're going clockwise and you're at your top left. So who are you and what do you do?
I'm Clayton Fletcher. I'm a professional stand-up comedian. I also do some corporate comedy training where I teach business people how to do stand up to improve their speaking skills, their, you know, public speaking and things like that. Of course, these days we're not doing much of either with the lockdown and whatever, but hopefully we're reaching the tail end of that. Right now I'm just basically concerned for Kerry's children because they're not being spoiled like every other kid in the world. Maybe child protective services should be called. You're supposed to give each kid exactly what he wants, and they each always get a trophy. Like, no one told you?
Yeah, it's scary. And they're all quarantined with me, so. And homeschooled. So I'm their teacher now. So good luck with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Tough mom. I love it.
They've already been expelled, you know. They had a food fight.
Yeah. It's tough to get suspended from homeschool, but it happened.
Well, they talked back to their teacher, and they fell asleep in class, and they had a fight in the hallway, so done.
And Sean Eli, who are you, and what do you do?
I'm Sean Eli. I would describe my job as standing on a box talking into a stick. That's pretty much what comedy is, but I have a new job. I park the ice cream and trophy truck outside of Kerry's house.
So I met Sean a couple years ago. I was actually at an event, and he was, you know, doing his act with other guys, et cetera. And, you know, I was always drawn to the business side, you know, the business side of entertainment, the business side of comedy, et cetera. And that's part of what I want to talk about today, you know, for our audience, et cetera. You know, Clayton, you mentioned the elephant in the room, the fact that, you know, we're under a pandemic and everything. We don't want to talk just about that, but we got to talk about that, right? Because there's a reason why we're all on Zoom right now. No, see, Sean was going to go, Tom, don't go there. Don't go there. You know, but let's start with Clayton, you know, tee it off for us. Cause you have the connection with corporate, and training and business, etc. So, you know, why don't you begin with some of your thoughts on what's going on and maybe what you think is going to happen in the next couple months.
Okay. Well, one thing to point out is that nobody actually knows. So whatever I say is just conjecture. Of course, we don't really know what's going to happen. But what's been going on right now is that comedians have had to choose between performing via Zoom or not performing at all. I did hear recently about some creative ideas like a drive-in movie theater where they're doing stand-up so people can like stay in their cars and enjoy the show. But by and large, the comedy clubs, as we know them, have been a no-go for the last several months. Now, for me personally, I haven't really gotten into Zoom performing. The idea of doing a traditional comedy set right here in my apartment is just so abhorrent to me. I've been offered a few opportunities, and honestly, none of them paid well enough for me to put myself through the pain of not hearing an audience laugh. Like, the whole reason I do comedy is because I love the sound of a group of people laughing, and over Zoom, you just don't get that. So like you hit your big punchline and you don't hear anything back. It actually sounds like my worst nightmare. So I'm basically waiting until bars and restaurants open back up and they start doing comedy in the clubs again. But I don't know about the others, but that's been my strategy. So I've basically not been doing comedy for the last couple of months.
I'm with Clayton on this. I think the secret to comedy is 100 people in a room that holds 70. You really have to hear the laughter of other people echoing. And if you put those same 100 people in a 1,000-seat theater and they don't hear other people laughing, they get self-conscious about laughing and they laugh less. And then they think they didn't have as much fun. The exact same show.
What are your thoughts, Carrie?
Right. Laughter is infectious, and it's all subjective and subliminal as well. So if you're quiet and dark and drinking, then you're gonna laugh more. I don't know. We don't know. This is uncharted territory. We don't know how people laugh if they're sitting in their living room or in their bedroom, naked.
I know exactly how people laugh when they're sitting in their bedroom naked.
This is the new normal, everybody. I'm doing a couple of shows. I'm doing a show called Nowhere Comedy Club, and it's nowhere. But the plus side to that is, places that we don't usually go in the middle of, nowhere. Everybody, some of my fans, like, when are you going to come in the middle of nowhere? I'm not. But now I have a nowhere comedy club, and you can see me, and I'll be performing in your bedroom. So that's a plus. But it's very difficult. But there's ways to do it. You have to kind of tweak your act, and we're still learning. It's just stage time. It takes you, 5 years to really learn who you are to begin with in this business. So to tweak your comedy in a Zoom, it's going to take some time. So I've done a few, and there's going to be bad ones, and then there's going to be some good ones.
Clayton, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's cool that Carrie is a very, very experienced comedian. She's been doing this for a long time, and to even hear her say that it's kind of like you have to start over and learn how to do it in another format, kind of proves my point. It's just there are comedians that are seeking those opportunities and that want to learn how to be, Zoom comedians. And maybe they're the smart ones, because who knows how long this will end up lasting and when people will actually be comfortable going back into the comedy clubs and sitting close to each other and laughing in close proximity to others. So maybe those who are, kind of embracing the idea of doing Zoom shows are the smart ones. Just for me, I'd probably sooner just get a regular job and do something else, because I don't want to do comedy where I can't hear people laughing. And that's just really the long and short of it, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. I have no other skills. this is it for me.
It's this or nothing, right, Carrie?
What you got, Sean?
The last time you had a non-entertainment job.
Sorry, what?
When was the last time you had a non-entertainment job? I don't even know if you've ever worked in an office.
Oh, me? No, I've never worked in an office, but I have another skill, which is I play professionally. I play Texas Hold'em. So in addition to being a comedian, I'm also a professional poker player. So one thing that's been happening a lot during this quarantine period is I've just been focusing more on that because that actually is something you can do from home. But yeah, I don't really enjoy it as much as I enjoy comedy. So I'm hoping we can get our clubs back, but at least I won't starve in the meantime.
Yeah. God, wish I had that skill. I'm starving. Wow. Well, I'm on a liquid diet, people.
Yeah, so are your kids.
Starving, it's because whoever's doing the cooking in your house isn't doing it.
Well, you know, Clay, you said the word smart a couple times. Okay. And I used to always say to Sean, because I've known him now for a while, I go, it was my personal opinion that comedians are smart. And I don't think you guys are going to argue with me on this one, but it was my vibe. I was like, you got to be smart. You got to have, you know, you got to be able to think. And it's like, there's a skill to it, but there's a certain brain chemistry going on. And, you know, I mean, are you guys going to say no, Tom? We know a lot of idiots or, I mean.
I'm going to say no. Actually, we think differently. That's for sure. But I am definitely not smart. I mean, in grade school, they coded me. I had LD, ADD, ADHD, AA, AAA. I had all the letters and dyslexia as well. So to say smart, we are different. We think different in the brain. I say we are socially brilliant. And that's what you need. That's the skill you need.
Well, go ahead, Sean.
I was going to say, here's the example. Tom and I were talking last week, and here's the example I gave then to give the idea of how comedians sort of look at things differently. So here's sort of a joke. I said, father-daughter dances are becoming more popular. Father-daughter dances, or as Woody Allen calls them, dances. Because when you hear father-daughter, Carrie may think, you know, her husband with her daughter, or her right. brother with her niece, or her with her dad going for a dance. As soon as I hear the phrase father-daughter, my brain says Woody Allen.
You're a pervert. That's what that's what I think.
Pervert, yeah.
That's what I got out of that whole message. Thanks, Sean.
It's about me.
I don't know if that's brilliant, but no, but it's but it's true. If you look, there's a lot of comedians who have Tourette's or autism or dyslexia, or there's some form of something that, you know, Tears of a Clown. There's a lot of comics that have a dependency on drug and alcohol. We're a different breed. And I think that when you're a comic, there is something else going on that makes you want to get up on that stage because it is different. It's a different form.
So I've got a question that I want all three of you to answer. And we'll go Clayton, Carrie, and then Sean. Were you always going to be a comic? Was this it from day one? Like you knew it, or you know, like how did it come to be where you go, you know what? I'm a professional comedian. You know, how and when did you become a comedian?
Clayton. So. For me, it was not always predestined. I mean, I think a career in the performing arts was predestined. My father was a jazz bass player. My grandfather was an opera singer. I come from a long line of performers. So, you know, I started in music. You know, when I was just a baby, my father started teaching me about music. And, you know, one of my very first jobs was subbing for him for a musical that he was playing for, a chorus line. So he was supposed to play bass. He ended up getting another gig and he called the producer and he said, listen, I got to bail tonight, but I have a replacement. My son is going to do the job. And I was 12. They didn't know that. So I walk in with this little boy walks in, 12-year-old boy walks in with the bass and they said, who the hell are you? And I said, well, I'm Ashton Fletcher's son and I'm going to be playing tonight. And they were like, you are? But, you know, I was good enough by then to play. And, you know, I'm not saying I played the gig perfectly, but that was my first professional experience. I actually got paid for playing. And so it looked like I was destined for a career in music. Then I got into acting and I started doing musical theater. And the first time I ever tried stand up, it was basically on a dare. One of my friends, I was in a show in New York. I was in off-Broadway production of Godspell. And I was actually Jesus. And one of the apostles during intermission was like, hey, you should try comedy. You're funny. I was like, no way. I could never. And he basically dared me to do it. once I did that, I didn't have any more interest in music or in acting or in anything else, because the rush that I got from this type of performing, I finally felt like I was, you know, not to sound corny, but I felt like I was home. Like I finally found what home was. And so ever since then, I've really just been focused on that type of performing. I mean, you can see the guitar in the background. I still, you know, dabble in music and everything, but as far as my my passion is definitely for comedy. So that's how I ended up here. I don't know about the others.
Carrie, you're up.
I think everybody has their own story. I don't think back then the people in our generation wake up and say, I want to be a comic. Whereas now it's more out there and it's more of a thing. So I'm sure people are now waking up and saying, you know, I want to be a comic when I grow up. Right. But for me, and especially for a woman, it was like totally not even like thought of, like, what even is that? So when I was little, I was never into, you know, that type of stuff. I was into sports and I was a jock. So that's where I did all my comedy, on the field. I was always the captain. I was always had a story of what happened at school today, imitating the teachers. And that was my platform, on the bus, getting everybody ready for the game and their spirits up by telling a funny story. I had a loud mouth and that's where it was. And then when I got into college, I wanted to do some form of performing, and Comedy 101 was always taken, and I was always busy with sports. So, Acting 101 was always already taken. So my husband is running around and doing things in the kitchen. I left him alone on
What does he do? What is your husband?
He's a stand-up comic. Yeah. Okay,
We need another screen.
Didn't think that through, people. We're both unemployed. I thought he was so cute and funny, and now I'm thinking I should have married a lawyer. So I'm in college and I wanted to do some form of performing because I was so busy and I was a jock. And back then in high school, if you were in the arts, you were considered in my school a loser. And I didn't want to do that. So I was always the jock. But when I got into college, I'm like, no way, I want to do something like this. And there was nothing to do except my sorority was running a beauty pageant. Now I was a jock. I had short hair like this. I had my sorority shaved in my head. I had DZ shaved in my head. I was not a sorority girl at all. I played field hockey, mouth guards, you know, big sticks, muscles. That's what I was. But I said, I'm doing it. And I loved comedy at the time. So I needed an act. So I'll do comedy. That was my only skill. I couldn't do sing or dance or anything like that. So that's what I did for my talent, was comedy. And I was hooked right there.
Sean?
I have a story similar to Clayton's, because my father, when I was 12 years old, my father was an accountant for Enron. And then one day he couldn't make it. He said, no problem, I'll send my 12-year-old son in. And you heard the rest of the story. I come from a storytelling background because I'm Jewish, and pretty much every holiday is just telling stories of the past. And if you could get a laugh, it was something that was valued, but I never thought it would be a profession. And I had no interest in being on stage until somebody talked me into taking a stand-up comedy class. And 16 years later, here I am, not earning any money from it.
Well, pandemic aside, all right, here's a question. I've asked this. Sean's going to go last because I ask him this all the time. So you're going to go first, Clayton. Why do I always see so many comedians go into acting, but I almost never see actors go into comedy? Why is that? Or am I wrong? But that's my observation. What are your thoughts?
Well, it might just be that you see what somebody is famous for first, but a lot of the people that are getting into comedy nowadays, they do come from an acting background. Many times, like if an actor has a personal manager or an agent, they might say, you know, a lot of these commercial auditions, they're looking for improv, they're looking for stand-up, you know, comedy's hot right now, we should try to get you on, you know, America's Got Talent or whatever. And so for some actors, they're kind of using comedy as just another box they can check off on their resume. But so they're actors who also do stand up, but what they're really into, the acting. Now for me, I was an actor. You know, I went to school for theater. I didn't discover comedy until after graduation. But for me, I didn't want to do the other one anymore. So some people are using comedy as a platform to help them get more acting work. And some people are in acting and then they use comedy as a way to kind of get themselves out there more and maybe open up some more doors. I mean, obviously the most successful performers around us are people that can do a lot of different things. Like they have hosting skills. They can sing, they can act, they can dance, they can do stand up, whatever. But I think deep down, you really have to love comedy to get good at it. An actor who's going to like take a class and maybe just check a box on a resume, you know, if they're talented, they might be a little bit funny, but really to get anywhere in comedy, you have to love this more than you love other things, because this is a much bigger sacrifice than being an actor or a musician or a singer or whatever.
Carrie?
I totally agree, Clayton, with you. You really have to love this. It is and it takes a long time to get good. And that's what it is. A lot of people don't have that patience.
Yeah.
But I do see some actors. I, you know, what gets me a little upset is these well-known actors who, you know, feel like they can do stand-up. And then they go and they're like, oh, I'm going to try stand-up. Or if their career, like Jeremy Piven, I think he had a small little glitch in his career and people weren't hiring. So he said, you know, I'll go to comedy. And these child actors who, you know, no one wants to book them anymore, they'll try to do stand-up comedy. And it's that gets me mad, because the hardworking comics who've been working hard in stage time and working up to that point, they don't get stage time anymore. They don't get those bookings because they have like almost like a name.
Yeah, because you lose your spot. You lose your spot to like Jeremy Piven or Stormy Daniels or whatever.
Right.
But we've been out here actually trying to get good at this, so it's really different. Yeah,
And we are. But they're a name, and people will sit through mediocre jokes that take forever for a punchline than to have a professional who have like tons of punchlines per minute and are funnier.
Yeah. Sean, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I agree with what they said. Famous Shakespearean actor Charlie Sheen tried stand-up comedy and failed miserably. But I think part of it is, if you're a comedian, I'm probably the rare comedian who has no interest in a sitcom. And I think the reason you know names like Roseanne Barr and Jerry Seinfeld and Ray Romano is specifically because they got sitcoms. So and now they're making tons of money, if they want to, doing stand-up. And so it's a really good career move if you can make it as an actor when you're a comedian. So there are some comedians who take acting classes and hope that that's their career path. But then you also have actors. I don't know that many actors go through years of stand-up comedy training and then say, okay, I'm ready to, you know, call myself a comedian. It doesn't work that way. Maybe you take a class and then you go to open mic nights. But there are a lot of actors, I think more in LA than New York, who say, oh, all these comedians have sitcoms. I'm just going to go tell jokes for 3 weeks and then I'll have my sitcom. And it doesn't work that way.
No, and I think the skill set is easier for a comic to go into acting than an actor to go into comedy, skill set wise.
So I'm going to ask the question two ways. I'm going to ask it as if the pandemic didn't exist, and then I'm going to ask it in the way like, okay, there's a pandemic, you know, right? If a niece or nephew came to you and said, you know, Aunt Carrie, Uncle Clayton, I want to be a comic. I want to go into comedy. Okay. How do you guide, advise, smack them in the head? I mean, what do you do? What do you do when someone that you love, what are the first kind of questions that you're going to say to them to give them advice from the heart to someone that says, I think I want to be in comedy? Who wants to go first?
My sons, they're 17. I have twin boys who are 17, and they roast each other, and they are so funny. And I try not to laugh. I try not to encourage it at all, because I do not want them to go into comedy. I mean, where is my retirement plan if they go into comedy? that's why I had kids. I mean, who's going to take care of me? I need to. But I would steer them away, unfortunately, because like we were just talking about, it's thick skin. You need thick skin. It is a long road to get to the top. It's a long road, and it takes a certain mindset, certain skill set for someone to do something like this, and it's not for everybody.
Okay, but just assume that they won't listen to you. They go, I'm going to do it anyway. I'm doing it.
Okay, so then my advice would be the same thing. It's going to be a long road. Don't think it's going to happen right away. There's going to be a lot of frustrations. You're going to bomb, but that's all part of the learning experience. Each time you bomb, you're going to get better because that feeling is so horrific. You don't ever want it to happen again, that you will write your ass off so you won't let that happen again, and you'll get back there on stage. And you got to get back on stage. You can't let that bomb know that the bomb is a learning experience. It's part of it.
Clayton, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I kind of have a different take because of the role models that I had in my family, as I mentioned. You know, I saw my father have a successful career as a jazz musician. And if his father hadn't been an opera singer, then when he went to his father to say, I'm going to make it as a jazz musician, his father would say, no, you're not. You're going to go to law school. You're going to have a real career. Where's my retirement plan? And all that kind of stuff. So I guess just coming from the background that I come from, where I've seen that if you work hard enough and you actually have talent, you actually can make a living. So I would encourage my niece or nephew, say, first of all, you know, to Carrie's point, this is super hard. So if you're not 100% sure that you want to do this and you think there's something else that you could do that might make you just as happy, you should absolutely do that other thing. If you're still with me in this conversation and you're talking to me about comedy, I would say you have to figure out what makes you different, what makes you funny, what makes you special, and tell the truth. You know, especially nowadays, audiences do not want to hear anything that isn't true. They want to at least have the ostensible believability of what we're saying. So as far as like trying really hard to learn how to be super funny, I think you're better off just learning how to kind of keep it real and be honest. And if you practice enough, you'll be able to combine the fact that you're telling the truth with the fact that you are naturally talented and funny. And then the laughs will come, and those laughs will be more authentic. But it's a much harder road than just, you know, sitting down and writing a few jokes and going up on stage and telling them. I mean, that's not even the process anymore.
Well, Uncle Sean, help me.
Well, I think, you know, Clayton's lucky in that his family background was in entertainment, because my parents' generation was financial security, you got to be a doctor, a lawyer, something like that, maybe a college professor. And my generation, you know, everybody in my family got to college. I took financial security for granted. I figured I would never starve. I sought happiness after earning a bunch of money working in finance. I said, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm going to do something else. And it took a lot of explaining to my parents to say, hey, my happiness comes first and I think I'll be okay. Here's my business plan for doing comedy full time. My niece is funny and she was interested in singing and dancing and acting. And then I thought maybe there's a chance she'd go into entertainment, and now she's a social worker. But she'll be a very funny social worker. But I think the advice is, if that's what you want to do, figure out the right way to do it. You know, take a class, learn what's involved. When I started, the internet was around, but it wasn't that big, but there were comics with websites and blogs. And I spent a lot of time reading about how the business worked and how you get better. And I think that makes a big difference. If you just go in saying, oh, I'm going to be the funniest thing ever, listen to my jokes, and never pay attention to the way to become better, it's a lot harder.
So we're going to wrap this thing up, and I'm going to give everybody, we'll call it 60 seconds. This is going to reach several million people. I wish I could take more personal credit, but it's okay, right? Most of the people that are going to see this are in business in some capacity. So if the pandemic was magically resolved and starting next week, the world opens up again, et cetera, and a corporate client or someone was going to see this, what would you say to them to say, hey, we're back in business, right? here's why you should hire me, here's what I got, etc. So Clayton, we're going to go with you first, then Carrie, then Sean. You got 60 seconds to, you got the ear of the CEO, the guy with the checkbook. What are you going to say?
Okay, the elevator pitch, if you will. Well, I would say I have tons of experience working with all different companies and all different industries, both as a performer, where I do clean corporate entertainment for various events, like an annual meeting or a holiday party or anything like that. And I also have my vast experience in teaching business people how to use comedy skills in business, whether it be for internal communications or for presentation skills and things like that. So I'm definitely somebody that kind of speaks the corporate language and could absolutely be an asset to your company. And my Twitter is at Clayton Comic. So hit me up.
All right. This is my floor. Hey, Carrie, how are you?
So I'm at CarrieLouise.com and CarrieLouise at CarrieLouise, .com. You can email me, and I've had 30 years in experience as being a stand-up comic. And if you don't believe me, I just did a show on Showtime called Woman of a Certain Age. And that certain age is 29. Yes, I started when I was 2. So, and I also am a writer. I wrote a book called Mean Mommy. And I also wrote a children's book called Harry the Elephant Has an Allergy. So I would be great for any type of education, PTA, women in the workplace, any type of those type of events, I would be fantastic at. I would be a great key speaker for that as well. I do tons of those key speaking women, battered women. I do that event every year, and to help raise money for that, and breast cancer and all that type of stuff.
Cool. Sean, this is your floor.
I'm worried about Carrie's math skills because she said she started when she's 2. She's 29, has 30 years worth of experience.
I told you I wasn't smart. I'm only socially brilliant. Remember that.
All right. Well, I have a degree in finance, so we can talk about working on your math skills. All of us do corporate events. My company, the Ivy League of Comedy, specializes in clean comedy for corporations, for theaters, and also for, you know, houses of worship, charities. And you don't have to pick. You can hire all of us. We've all worked together. We tend to do shows with 3 or 4 comics. So it's not a competition. But if you think it's a competition, then just pick whichever one of us you thought was funniest on this meeting. And my website, I have 2 websites, theivyleagueofcomedy.com. And my own website is brainchampagne.com, which has 50,000 words worth of jokes on it. And to give you an idea how much content that is, an average novel is about 100,000 words.
Very cool.
John, I thought you were going to say, if you think it's a competition, then just pick me.
A choice.
Well, guys,
You're too nice.
I thoroughly enjoy this. We will have the links to your websites and your bios, et cetera, you know, on our page. And we're going to certainly do what we can post-pandemic and during pandemic to see if we can, you know, get some action for you. But this was our inaugural Coffee in the Clouds with comedians.
Yeah.
Guys, thanks for your time. Take care.
Thank you.
We'll be back.